You're listening to The Lead, a podcast where we learn how to get ahead in the media industry from the people that did. I'm Daniel Funky. Today on the show, we have Dan Petty, a senior editor at the Denver Post. During our conversation, Dan talks about his work in audience engagement at a legacy news organization and how simply listening to readers could help save the newspaper industry. But first, a word from our sponsor. This podcast was created by the Cox Institute for Journalism Innovation, Management, and Leadership as part of its Innovation Fellowship Program. To learn more, go to grady.uga.edu/Cox Institute. I had the opportunity to interview Dan Petty while he was visiting the Grady College as part of the Google News Lab training program, which the Cox Institute joined last semester. Dan focuses mainly on audience engagement at the Denver Post and has great insight on how news organizations can use digital technologies to expand their reach and be more profitable. Here's our conversation. How's it going, Dan?
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you oversee a lot of the audience engagement functions at the Denver Post, especially pertaining to breaking and trending news, as I understand it. Audience engagement can sometimes be a confusing or even ambiguous term. So how would you break it down for our listeners? And what are some ways you're trying to apply that concept at the Denver Post?
Sure. Well, one of the things you just have to know about audience engagement in general is that, you know, not just newspapers, but other media outlets, there's so much content and information out there that you almost need people like myself, and there's many other people in roles like mine, and we have other people that think about things like audience engagement. You have to have people that are focused on trying to get people to create some kind of affinity with the brand. For somebody like the New York Times, that affinity is going to hopefully, for them, lead to subscriptions. They want people ultimately to pay for their product. For me, what I'm focused on and what our group is focused on really is how do I get more people in Denver and Colorado reading our product? If I can do that, we can monetize those audiences a lot more effectively than we can other people outside the state. And so, you know, in 20, 30 years ago when you didn't have the internet, you didn't have options, your choices for getting news were essentially the newspaper, the television stations, and possibly radio. And that was it. Those big three. Facebook didn't exist, of course, all these other things. And so you would command, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80% of the market if you had a newspaper. Market penetration. Now, no one can really claim that. Facebook can claim that. Even the best regional news publications are in the high 20s and low 30s. If you get a big event like the Super Bowl, like we'll climb up there in the high 20s, low 30s. But like generally, we're averaging maybe market penetration of around 15 to 20%, depending, which is really different. It means you have to, like, what do I need to do to ensure that I get people who are engaging with the product? If I get return visitors up, especially if I can go after people like Generation X, I can start working my way toward a more sustainable digital business model.
You kind of talked a lot just now about targeting specific demographics. What are some specific ways that newsrooms can do that using either content or multimedia elements to try to attract a wider readership?
Well, I think it starts with first not boxing yourself into telling stories in one specific way. And I think sometimes what's difficult in legacy organizations, and I'm not saying it's just ours, like everywhere, is everyone's grappling with this, is, you know, what is the best way to tell this story? Is it a documentary-driven video that's 20 minutes long or 30 minutes long? Is it just a 90-second clip that I upload to Facebook? What is the best way to tell this story? Is it a live stream? We did a live stream of the Women's March on Denver a few weeks ago and reached 22 million people in our Facebook page, which for a regional newspaper, like unprecedented amount of reach. The thing was played like 7 million times. I mean, we have had nothing, I guarantee you, in the history of anything that we have ever published ever reach that kind of thing. That sort of thing is responding to the fact that technology companies like Facebook and Google and others are really driving a lot of where we have to spend time and resources. We have to pay attention with. They command an immense amount of audience attention. And, you know, 2 years ago we were live streaming, but we ultimately decided to give it up because, you know, the cost return on investment just wasn't there. We were certainly reaching people, but it wasn't a ton. Now suddenly Facebook decides that live video is really important. They want high quality live video content. Suddenly we start streaming live video, and it bumps to the top of a newsfeed. I get tens of thousands of looks and views. The monetization question is still a big one. We don't know, and Facebook's aware of that and seems to be moving toward trying to change that. But you know, you have to think about it. What makes sense for the Women's March on Denver? That live feed was. We did other kinds of storytelling. We did. We embedded tweets. We put maps out and other things like that. But the thing that was most effective at reaching an audience was that live feed on our Facebook page. That was the way that people responded to that story, was being able to listen to what speeches were being said and being able to see the enormousness of that crowd. And other people found the same thing. I remember that Saturday. We pulled in extra people because it was that big, you know, versus, and I just talked about this in one of the classes, you know, we did some really rich explainers and deep in-depth pieces around the election, around some of our ballot measures that received huge amounts of audience engagement and traffic because people were trying to make sense of a very complex issue. And in that case, the best way to tell that story was through lengthy Q&A type explainers. That's what the audience responded to. So you have to really take everything on a case-by-case basis.
I think something you're touching on is kind of this divide between what traditional journalists think their audience need and what the audience wants. So how do you balance what news organizations put out, what they think is good for the public good, and what the audience really wants at the end of the day?
Sure. I don't think that they're mutually exclusive things all the time. I think there's sometimes this tendency to think that, you know, the only way that we can grow audience and reach more people and scale our business model, and local, it's a different kind of story, and there are different models out there. Some people, you know, scale isn't the goal, and it can't be. You're never going to be the Huffington Post or BuzzFeed or the New York Times or any of these others, the Washington Post, that attract mass amounts of audience. But if you're reaching the right audience, that's what matters. But what we've found is some of our best work gets the highest amount of engagement time. We just published a story a couple weeks ago about a cold case that recently had a big break in it, and they discovered some evidence that had been left behind in a police shed. And people were spending 6.5-7 minutes on that story. It was in depth, it was long, but it was also really compelling. It's not just that, oh, I need to boil this down into 10 GIFs and that's the way to do it, and that's the way I get audience. In fact, like, we were seeing both high quality traffic and people sticking with the story. Some of our best work is our investigative work. The New York Times would tell you the same thing. The stuff that does really well is really deep investigative work. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, a couple months ago we had this situation where this slackliner went and like cut a skier who had somehow managed to tangle himself up on a chairlift, and we had this amazingly compelling video of this slackliner going, like, climbing up on this ski lift, shimmying down the thing and cutting this guy loose. Like, amazing stuff. And you see him, like, fall to the ski patrol. I mean, a ridiculous video, absolutely viral, drew like hundreds of thousands of page views and video views. And yeah, you're going to get that stuff sometimes, and because it's incredible and really interesting to look at. But, you know, when it comes to the day-to-day stuff, like what's really going to enforce quality to your audience, it's, I think, investing in quality content. And so, you know, again, they don't have to be mutually exclusive things. It's not that we don't get the viral stuff and we don't get the links from Drudge and some of these other places that aren't great, but the quality work does speak for itself. A lot of times the challenges, people say, like, oh, quality work doesn't work. Well, what we really have to ask is the story framed the right way? Is it written in an interesting way? Does it have a really good headline on it? Have you approached it in a smart way? There's still a lot of cases, and we've been really working on this, and certainly others have, that, you know, we really want to write a great headline to really tell the story. And if that means that we have to adjust our framing and focus a little bit to try and make sure that we're telling something compelling and interesting, even on dry subjects. We just wrote something about severance taxes in Colorado, like, which you can imagine, like, it's the most boring topic in the world. But we framed it around this idea that Colorado, through the oil and gas boom, had basically managed to save no money from its oil and gas drilling. And North Dakota, by contrast, had saved something like $4 billion. And it was all related to severance taxes. But severance taxes, like, it was a hearing of the Joint Budget Committee in the legislature, and just the way the reporter approached it, framed it in that way, this really compelling headline, look at Colorado is versus North Dakota, and here you have a really ostensibly, or what you would think would be a boring story, turns into a smash hit because it was framed in the right way. It took a complex issue and made it interesting.
One of the best pieces of advice I've gotten during my career is to make whatever news organization you're working at essential to its audience, especially if it's a metropolitan newspaper. A lot of the coverage I feel like you're talking about is something that's very specific to the Denver Post's brand. Besides just simple coverage, what other things does the Post try to do to make sure that its audience needs to come back to the Post for news is pertaining to its community.
I think it's really around exclusive content. You know, are you producing stuff that they can't get anywhere else? And I think we're in, a unique moment right now. There's so much talk about fake news, which, of course, in such a brief amount of time has gone from actually meaning something to meaning nothing at all. It's been co-opted and used by partisans to mean anything, essentially, that I don't agree with. But what we have seen, certainly, we've seen a small bump. Others have seen much larger ones, is this interest and commitment in journalism. People are recognizing that, hey, the press is struggling, but the press and independent and free press is also important as a check on power as well. And so you're seeing this huge growth. And again, you know, why are subscriptions to these places going up? Why is Vanity Fair and the New York Times and Washington Post? It's because they're providing really in-depth exclusive coverage. It's the same thing. So I think what it is that you can see, like, if people feel like you're giving them something of value, then you're going to be rewarded with it financially. People are going to come back to you. You're going to feel like I can, if it's a community-based thing, I understand more about my community now than I did before. It's not just, you know, different things. We're actually verticalizing a lot of stuff too. So we're actually building out separate communities. We have a whole vertical that just covers cannabis, which is a really big topic in Colorado, a place called The Cannabist. And we've really managed to grow a national level audience that's interested. We cover things in California, and it's this sort of experiment to see how can we really build up a brand around a topic as opposed to just a coverage area, which is what the Denver Post does. We've also got this separate vertical now called The Know. Different site design. It's really focused on younger audience, things to do, entertainment, bars, nightlife type stuff. But we decided to take it out of the sort of traditional framing of our newspaper website into its own separate thing to allow some more flexibility and really open it up to chasing new audiences. So to me, it's quality. That's what matters.
Do you think an institutional focus on developing audience engagement strategies could provide an alternative business model or maybe save the institutions that we've had for so long in journalism?
That's a really complex question. I think, again, the impetus around audience engagement is really, you know, for years, and this is predates my time, for years we just didn't have to worry about this stuff because we were the big dog on campus and they didn't have any other choice for where to go. I say this all the time. Like, you have to make yourself indispensable because it's not that what you do isn't important and valuable. It's that there's still only 24 hours in the day and people have a ridiculous number of choices for how to spend their media consumption time. You remember, you're competing against Netflix and Hulu and HBO Go and New York Times and Facebook, and more people are going to Facebook or they're going to Google to find their information. And so instead of you being like a distinct brand, you're just one of many brands. There was a study that just came out, I think from Pew, a few days ago that mentioned that there's a sizable chunk of people who, when they open up their Facebook feed, they think that the news is coming from Facebook. They don't think that the news that they see linked in there is actually coming from these brands, which is a huge problem. It means that, you know, is our brand being potentially watered down in that river of content? It's certainly a great way to consume stuff when you're getting things from friends or other things like that. But how do you really break through and say, like, I am important, I have an established brand, and you should, you know who I am? It's really challenging.
Keeping in mind the current political discussion about fake news and media over-reliance, perhaps, on social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter, what advice do you have for young journalists who want to be involved with serious journalism but might be a little discouraged by the political climate that's going on and even where media is going on social media platforms? What would you say to them?
I mean, I would say just where we are politically right now, you can see just that even though it seems and certainly is challenging at its face, it's also an incredibly powerful time too. Some of the best work coming out right now is coming out from places like the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and the New York Times. Their high-quality, deep, aggressive coverage is being rewarded by audiences. CNN, among them, doing really great work right now. And, you know, cable ratings are up, and the number of people coming to sites are up. Like, it's clear that people are hungry for high-quality information. I mean, it's a fascinating story. It's one of the most fascinating stories that, you know, certainly my career is now only 7 years old professionally, but it's one of the most fascinating stories, I think, that we've ever had a chance to cover. And I, you know, in terms of advice to students, I would just say it really just all comes down to storytelling. If you have a really great story, and it doesn't have to be presidential politics related or something, but if you have a good, compelling, and interesting story, there is going to be an audience for it somewhere. Someone is going to want to know about it. More power if on a local level it's something that reveals something about your community that other people didn't know. You're telling people something that they didn't know or they didn't know that they didn't know. I talk a lot about how we can use data from places like Google and others to determine what people do want to know by figuring out aggregate search data and then and creating content around that. But there's obviously a whole other side to, you know, how do we create stuff that is of value because no one else is telling me that unless a journalist is going and telling that story. There's still a market for that. And I think Facebook is certainly moving this direction. They've got indications that they're moving this direction. They know they have a problem with fake or hoaxy or misleading news, and they know they need to fix it. Google has really, I think, worked a lot more to fix things like that, and so quality content is really rewarded. Newspapers and major media and television stations and other major media are really in a position to be rewarded for that, that high-quality information matters. Google certainly knows it. Facebook recognizes it. And, you know, for young journalists who may be feeling a little despairing, like, just know that I think really quality content and quality journalism is going to win out in the end.
Dan Petty, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dan Petty is a senior editor at the Denver Post. Thank you for listening to The Lead. Today's episode was produced by Daniel Funke with special help from Keith Herndon, director of the Cox Institute at the University of Georgia. For more interviews with media leaders, go to soundcloud.com/theleadpodcast or find us on Twitter at @theleadpodcast. We'll have new episodes every 2 weeks throughout season 2, so follow us to make sure you don't miss a thing.